on Saturday, I leave for a visit to the Republic of Korea, China and Vietnam to further cement New Zealand's strong relations with the Asia region. This is my first ever visit as Prime Minister to the Republic of Korea and Vietnam. It's my second visit to China as Prime Minister. While in Korea, I will have a summit meeting with President Lee to discuss the current free trade negotiations, security on the Korean Peninsula, and Korea's preparations to host the G20 summit in November. This will also mark the 60th anniversary of the start of the Korean War. And to commemorate this, I'll visit the War Memorial in Yongsan, Seoul, for a wreath-laying ceremony in tribute to New Zealanders who lost their lives in this conflict. In Beijing, I will have formal discussions with Chinese leaders and will also visit the New Zealand Expo Pavilion in Shanghai to mark New Zealand's National Day on July the 9th. In Vietnam, I will meet with, among others, the Prime Minister, President and Senior Communist Party representatives. I'll return to New Zealand on the 13th. In terms of my activity this week, I'll be in house tomorrow and Wednesday. On Thursday, as already indicated, I'll be in Christchurch at a function to mark the first year of the Home Installation Scheme. On Friday, I'll be in Aokuni to open stage one of the Ruapehu Whanganui Trails. This is part of the National Cycleway Trail Project, run by the Tourism Ministry. It means that 14 kilometres from Aokuni to Horopito is open and ready to use. The 33 kilometres of track through the Mangaparoa has been formed and is ready to use. On Saturday, I leave for overseas. In terms of other ministers, tomorrow morning, Justice Minister Simon Power and Police and Corrections Minister Judith Collins will launch the new services that victims of crime will be entitled to from July 1. The services will aim to help those people who have suffered because of serious crime, including domestic violence, sexual violence or the death of a family member. The services include the introduction of a $50 offender levy, on-the-spot safety orders for victims of domestic violence, an enhanced homicide support service, a new sexual violence court support service, and new information resources for victims of crime. How we serve victims of crime is one of the most important issues facing our law enforcement agencies. The Sentencing Offender Levy Act 2009 and the Domestic Violence Enhancing Safety Bill have helped give those agencies the tools to help victims of crime seek redress, find closure, and move on with their lives. So I can use your part of the talking about retrofitting houses, we'll retrofit the state.
It can't be helped.
There's only so much help you can give to the New Zealand Herald without offending the Dominion Post. Then finally, just in the House this week, there'll be a 3-hour debate on the performance and current operations of Crown entities, public organisations and state enterprises. That is tomorrow. The House will also be making progress on the Court's Remote Participation Amendment Bill and the Education Amendment Bill number 2 will receive its first reading. That's it for me, and we'll let the boys fix things up.
Do you think the iwi up on the East Coast Ngātika has got much of a case to stop drilling for catch and release?
No, they don't have a case to stop drilling. There's 2 points I'd make there. Firstly, we all care about the potential environmental issues, and that's why the government's been working very hard to strengthen the laws in terms of New Zealand's economic zone. That's why we've supported the Environmental Protection Agency and why I expect to see new regulations coming in place. But I would add that some years ago now, New Zealand nationalised minerals for the benefit of all New Zealanders. That included oil and gas, and on that basis, we reserve the right to take them wherever we want. And in the case of Rokumara Basin, we certainly will be taking them from there. Well, Petra Bass will be assuming wants to move ahead from his prospecting licence and support drilling.
So have you received any kind of, what sort of assurances did you seek and get behind the scenes from Petrobras?
Well, Petrobras is a very large company. It's a very large state-owned and state-controlled, effectively not fully state-owned, a Brazilian company. They are operating around the world. They'll have to fit in with whatever regulations are in place in New Zealand by the time they actually ever start wanting to drill holes in that part of New Zealand. Then there'll be strong environmental standards in place, and they'll have to meet those standards, although they're going to progress with their prospecting licence.
So you're not concerned that there could be any sort of Gulf of Mexico type incidents?
No, I mean, look, I think New Zealanders look at what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico with the gas, as to people from all around the world. We don't want to see a repetition of that in New Zealand. That's something that the entire oil exploration industry has in front of mind now, that we can see how badly wrong these things can go. So I don't see it as specific to Ngāti Porou's area or that bit of the New Zealand coastline. I see it as wanting to strengthen our environmental protection for any deep sea drilling.
Did the Cabinet discuss the mining issue today?
It didn't, no.
Are you close to making decisions on it?
It's moving closer. I'm not sure whether we'll discuss it next week or the week after, but it's in that time frame.
Have you had a briefing on the PPP point?
No, I haven't.
In terms of smoking, does the government have any plans to put a ban in place in other areas like Parliament, for instance?
No, we've had discussions about that. The issue in relation to prisons was something that the Minister had raised. I know it's something that Corrections had raised with her. We'd seen that place in Australia, and we felt for a number of reasons it was a move in the right direction operationally. Corrections wanted to make that move. And I think for not only the people that work there, but for the non-smoking prisons, it makes sense. As you're aware, it's like beginning on 1 July 2011, that we're in the process of helping prisoners to kick their habit. And I think that's a step in the right direction, but at this point we don't need to have further moves.
Is it a bit of nanny statism?
Well, I don't think so when you're talking about prisons. If you want to roll that out further into the environment, well, that could be the case, although, you know, it's large amounts being from more, you know, practical places that people go out, other than outdoors and parks and the likes. And that debate, from memory, we had some months ago, and I remember at the time expressing some real concern about seeing an extension. Notwithstanding, of course, we don't want young kids to be having smoke blown open in the park, but I think there is a fine line there between really the invasion of what is an impossible thing.
Ash is saying that they want New Zealand to ban the duty-free sale of tobacco, and indeed that we've signed up to some convention that should get us to look at this. Do you know if there are any considerations from the New Zealand government to look at reducing or stopping the duty-free sale of tobacco?
I don't. I mean, I can get some advice on that, but I'd be very surprised if we did, because, I mean, one of the issues, of course, is that people are able to buy duty-free goods anywhere on the plane, on the exit point of where they're leaving, so why would New Zealand sign up to that if airlines were going to continue to sell cigarettes on board if they were going to be sold in other parts of the world where people are starting their journey? So I certainly haven't had any advice to that regard, and I don't think we'd be occurring.
Is there any risk with this kind of smoking policy about the management of prisons, given that guards are now going to have to deal with teaching prisoners giving up smoking, and on an ongoing basis too, as new prisoners arrive every time and you know, have to give up cigarettes?
Well, obviously, there's the risk that some prisoners get grisly about that. They're probably fairly grisly they're in prison as well. So there's a number of factors that guards are having to deal with. Then there's the other way around, which is cigarettes are used often as a sort of bartering device within prisons. There's risks about lighters and matches. So there's a number of risks that one needs to weigh up. But on balance, I can sort of that workplace, the fact that people need to live in that place, and many of those prison and correction officers will be non-smoking New Zealanders, then I think this is a right move.
The Corrections Association, though, has said that people coming off nicotine can be volatile and can be even more dangerous. Are you making it harder for them to do their job in what's already quite a volatile situation?
I don't believe so. I think someone's going to be volatile in prison. It's going to be more than just giving up cigarettes. That's going to probably have matched that.
How can we keep tobacco out of prisons, given that we have an acknowledged problem with illegal drugs in prisons?
Yeah, well, I mean, there may well always be a undercover sort of drug, and in this case, tobacco trade in prisons. As prison services, it's proven quite difficult to stamp out. But for the bulk of cigarette use, that will disappear once there's a smoking ban.
Prime Minister, can I just ask if the pandas are going to be discussed in your trip to China?
Yes, I think they will be. So the issue there is we've been having some preliminary discussions with the Chinese authorities. It's a very early stage, I might add. I personally have been supportive of the idea, and I think it's a good idea, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that if we would sign up to the current conditions, even if the Chinese would lease us these pandas for 10 years, there's a cost now that actually has to be offset from the considerable revenue that would come in. But my hope was that we could negotiate a much better deal from New Zealand's perspective. So I am keen to try and advance that, but whether it will be successful, I don't know. There's not a lot of pandas to go around, and whether they can come to New Zealand for 10 years, I'll let you know.
And if we've got this right, can you tell us about the kiwis, swapping the kiwis, will that reduce the cost of the panda?
Well, that's the aim. I mean, it's about, the aim here is to sort of say, it's not, you know, what's the value of the panda, this is the value of the kiwi. But the aim is really to say, look, this is a forming of a stronger bond with China, and one way to exchange that is to exchange, you know, animals that are of national significance to each country.
And who will pick up the cost for the panda?
Well, that's where it starts to get a little bit more interesting. So there's potential leasing costs. For whatever zoo took the pandas, there's building of enclosures. Then there's also the particular bamboo that they are fed, and there's other panda trainers that come with them and people look after them. So there's a lot more to pandas than meets the eye, as I learned when I started looking down this path. But so the answer is, I would expect potentially local government, depending on where they live, might pick up a little bit. We would pick up some, but the economic stimulus from a pair of pandas is quite significant, as Adelaide has found out.
And in terms of the kiwi, there have been some concerns raised around kiwi.
It didn't come out of the job summit, by the way, for one of you asked.
They're not going to be on the bike trail.
No, they're not going to be on the bike trail, but hey, you know, it makes it you certainly bike faster when you're just a panda there.
So the kiwis going there have been some concern raised about, you know, conditions the kiwi might be kept in. Are you satisfied that they won't end up doing circus tricks or something like that?
I am, yeah. I mean, we'd make sure that our kiwis were well treated and looked after. We'd send them over to 10 years.
Just in terms of the Navy making this goodwill visit to the United States, and the inevitable question of whether it would be made, I mean, is there any consideration to that?
There hasn't been, no. Look, when the Defence Review was being undertaken by the United States and we had some generalised update on how that review had gone, it was clear at that point the shift isn't something that's on the programme at this point. Yeah, that could change, but it's not something that I certainly think is likely in the short
term. When you say it was made clear that that wasn't on the programme, was that coming from the New Zealand government? Is that your position?
No, it's not our position. On the US side, I think it's likely the shift is going to happen.
Right. But have you said to them, hey, welcome to China?
Well, I wouldn't be opposed, providing could fit the conditions that we need to meet, which is in relation to anti-nuclear legislation. And the second point, of course, is notwithstanding the substantial thawing of the relationship and improvement of the relationship, the US still has the agreement with the 9-4-7, and that's the issue.
You run into the same thing, because you say you're welcome to come as long as you tell us what you're doing, and they say we're not going to tell you what you're doing.
That's right.
Have you been briefed at all on the TCAL Trust coming under Queen Corkery and what's going on there?
I haven't, no. Okay.
Have you talked to Julia Gillard again?
No, I haven't. I spoke to Kevin Rudd on Saturday night. But I haven't spoken to Prime Minister Gillard. I'm not sure when that will take place. At some stage in the future, probably for sure, but not. I'm not sure when.
So what did you say to Kevin Rudd?
Look, I just reiterated that I enjoyed the working relationship that we had together, acknowledged the brutal nature of politics. That's just goes without saying. I wish him the best. I look forward to working with him in whatever capacity he was in the future.
Would you expect Julie Gillard to visit soon? Obviously, Kevin Rudd is due here tomorrow, but would you expect him to see him next week, weeks or months?
I didn't have any indication from her when I spoke to her immediately after her appointment that whether that would take place or not. What we did agree is that there'd be a follow-up phone call in the very foreseeable future. I imagine that might take place actually when I'm in Asia. But it would depend, I think, on the timing of the Australian election, and that's clearly in her hands, because she does have an election that's, you know, quite soon. I'd imagine she'd be tied up with domestic politics. If it's a little later, she may have some time to come over.
And would you expect her to be, I know it's not up to you, but here at the Pacific Islands Forum, and that might be one of her first sort of regional, major regional...
Yeah, well, that's in Vanuatu, isn't it, in August, I think, from Arizona. Yes, I would imagine she would be, I mean, given us such significant players along with us in the Pacific, but again, it would just depend on the timing of any Australian election.
Well, that's a Ngāti Porou problem on the East Coast. Are you satisfied with the consultation that's occurred?
Yes, I am. And there has been consultation, as I understand, it's gone on since 2008. It's quite extensive consultation. I think it's also important to acknowledge that sometimes with consultation it doesn't mean agreement.
With the next phase of the ETS beginning this week, are you comfortable, or what would you say to households who are now, according to some research, are facing half the total costs of the scheme in the first 5 years, despite only accounting for 19% of the emissions?
Well, look, I think firstly I'd say we are putting in place an emissions trading scheme which is half the cost of labours and recognises New Zealand's need to be making a positive step in terms of putting a price on carbon and recognising our responsibility when it comes to climate change, but taking the most gentle of entry in doing so. Secondly, I acknowledge the point that a disproportionate amount is being paid currently by households. But that's because if we are too heavy-handed with businesses, particularly those trade-exposed businesses in day one, that runs the risk of those very same households potentially losing their jobs. And I think that's just the balance here. Now, over time, of course, we want emitters to face a proper price for carbon over a greater proportion of their emissions, that they change their behaviour. And we do have some plans to make sure we work with the business community to allow them to try and, particularly the SME sector, to better be able to access funding to reduce the emissions profile. But it's at the moment, this is an entry point, and over time, there's no question that the bulk of further cost will ultimately fall on industry. But it's also worth pointing out that if it's not trade focused, then that cost ultimately comes back onto consumers when they buy their goods and services.
And I see Contact Energy is continuing to roll out price increases. There's other companies arguing that the cost of the ETS on their generation, therefore retail operations, it's not obvious what that will be. Do you think they're being premature
I would just caution companies to make sure that they don't start blaming the emissions trading scheme and use that as a reason to raise prices if it's not justified. In the case of Contact Energy, some of the advice I've had is that in the Dunedin area, they're looking to raise prices between 10 and 17%. Well, that can't possibly be justified on the back of an emissions trading scheme. And for a company to blame the emissions trading scheme for that sort of price increase is quite incorrect. The most effective energy company when it comes to the emissions trading scheme is Genesis, because it has Huntley Power Station, and they're not raising prices in day one. So I just caution companies to make sure that they are upfront and honest with their consumers about if they're raising prices, why. And I urge consumers to use the ability that they have to shop around and get alternative suppliers if they feel they're not being treated properly.
Well, making sure that that system is running properly, because there have been stories about it being very difficult for consumers, and that's really the only choice they have is to go and find somewhere else.
Yeah, well, when I first heard that Contact Energy issue in Dunedin, I raised the matter immediately with the Minister of Energy, who was in China at the time, and he issued a press release that day, making sure that consumers were aware of their options and choices, and will continue to monitor that.
Well, one of the least affected is Mighty River Power. They're state-owned. They're raising it from day one. They're not affected from day one.
Yeah. Well, that's what I say. I just urge people to make sure that they don't blame the scheme for the wrong things.
So are you sending a message to that state-owned enterprise?
Not specifically. My comments are right across the board.
Prime Minister, on Korea, what will your message be to the President regarding the progress of the
FTA? Well, we are very keen to see the FTA completed. And we acknowledge that there are a number of elements which provide, if not a second point, at least points of further negotiation. And I think sometimes to get these FTAs completed, you need political will. It's not just a matter of the officials negotiating for you, it's just so far that they can go with until they need a mandate from up high. And so one of the major reasons for going to Korea is to try and put some political emphasis behind the FTA negotiations to see if they can be completed.
What do you see as one of the second points at the moment?
Well, agriculture is clearly one of them. But when the Korean president came out to New Zealand last year, that was when we first started discussing the issue of the FTA. He is known as being someone that supports free trade. I enjoyed my talks that I had with him last year. He's very easygoing and is keen to see strong economic growth in both New Zealand and Korea. And I'm confident that we can continue to make progress. These things are always sensitive and they always take enormous negotiations on both sides. And some goodwill, but I'd like to see that deal come through if it was possible.
Why agriculture?
It's just always the case with protection.
Beijing? What leaders?
I'm definitely meeting Vice President Xi, and I'm also seeing Premier Wen. I'm pretty sure he's in, who's not in town, but I think Premier Wen is hosting in the Indonesia as Vice President Xi. I think Vice President Xi might be Shanghai, and President Premier Wen might be Beijing.